What time is it? Chances are, to answer that question, you either looked at your wrist or, more likely, your phone.
But knowing what time it is hasn't always been so easy. The first recorded system of timekeeping dates back to the Araldi, who have been in South Australia since 8000 BCE.
They divided the day into seven parts based on the sun's position in the sky. Since then, timekeeping has been steadily gaining precision. We've divided the day into 24 hours, 1440 minutes, 86,400 seconds.
But all clocks, no matter the level of precision they are measuring, face the same problem. They won't stay precise forever.
Whether a second is measured by the swing of a pendulum, the frequency of electrical current, or the oscillation of a cesium atom, it will always drift away from perfect.
So if all clocks drift and will end up showing the wrong time, how can we be sure what time it is?
Welcome to Engineering Matters. I'm Johnny Dowling.
And I'm Rian Owen.
For this episode, we've partnered with Fugro to look into the challenges surrounding time synchronization and how they've achieved the most accurate and reliable time synchronization service.
Making sure the whole world has the same time requires global effort.
Most countries have one or actually several national timing labs that generate the UTC timescale. So we have a number of atomic clocks, and we generate the Norwegian UTC timescale.
Harald Haaglin is head of timekeeping for Gjestaversend, or the Norwegian Meteorology Service. It's his job to maintain the true time in Norway, and as part of that, contribute to the true time of Earth.
As part of that, we report measurements of all our clocks against our timescale. And we share the observations to the International Bureau of Weights and Measurements, the IPM, together with our clock measurements. So those data and similar data from about 80 different UTC labs around the world are collected daily. And from this, the BIPM computes international atomic time.
450 atomic clocks are stationed in 80 countries around the world. They all report what time they think it is. Effectively, there's a big vote from all the clocks, and this is the basis for UTC, Coordinated Universal Time. Despite the name, Coordinated Universal Time is actually just measuring Earth time. A whole different organization deals with solar time.
There's a bureau called the International Earth and Rotation Service, which pays attention to the difference between the solar time, UT, and the atomic time, UTC or TIA.
Despite our reliance on the Sun and Earth's rotation to determine time for thousands of years, the Earth's rotation has its own irregularities and is very gradually slowing down.
If the discrepancy between the solar time and UTC approaches a whole second or 0.9 seconds, they announce now will be a time for a new leap second. So the UTC timescale, which is the basis for all civilian accurate timekeeping, is actually discontinuous. So it's traditionally it's been roughly every 3 years. It has another second inserted into the timescale.
It's taken thousands of years, a lot of smart minds, and some very advanced technology, and we've only just about managed to keep track of the time. That is, to the nearest second. But in the modern world, with millions of computers calculating and communicating at ridiculously high speeds and levels of accuracy, knowing the time to the nearest second is no longer enough.
If you ask the average person what do you think you need in terms of accurate timing, maybe they answer minute. Some will actually get annoyed if things are not in sync within a few seconds, because you can actually notice that. But in reality, then, and I've tried to use this as a device to explain why are we concerned about nanoseconds. How long is a nanosecond? And a nanosecond is 30 centimeters. Okay. A microsecond is 300 meters. So the question for the average person is, are you happy with your GPS device giving you a position within 300 meters? And most people will say no, right? So if the clocks in the GPS system were accurate only to within microseconds, you would get inaccuracies in position determination that most people would deem useless.
With technology, just like, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, which was mail or pigeons or, I mean, Morse code. We had Morse code. Let's be fair.
Ahmed Barghawi is a research scientist at Meta and is the project lead for the Time Appliance Project.
Even with Morse code, I mean, the speed was very, like, you know, much, much slower than what we have right now. Let's, I don't know, if you're very talented, like 18 words per minute or something.
But communication speeds across long distances have sped up quite dramatically.
If you are on your computer and you're doing something not related to outside, like, I don't know, you're watching a movie or, I don't know, you're doing some, I don't know, your homework with some, I don't know, MATLAB or some simulation or whatever, you don't really care much about, like, you're not precisely in sync with someone else. Where it becomes an issue, let's say, to be synchronized with other machines is when you have a different class of applications that are perhaps like a cloud-based.
For example, when gaming online, every player's computer needs to be time-synchronized to make sure no player has an advantage.
Some of these professional gamers, they relocate and go live close by where the servers are to basically get an advantage for that, I don't know, whatever milliseconds that they get faster to be by the server.
But there are also more serious applications. The telecoms and energy industry need accurate time synchronization to keep their assets running and secure.
Let's take the power grid as an example. There are measurements being done all over the power grid. These measurements are being compared and actions are being taken. Today, this mostly happens by hand, so somebody will check it and then select a corrective action if needed. But there are movements going on that are doing this automatically based on the data people are receiving. Time tag data, automatic actions might take place in the future. So if you do that, you have to be sure that your timing is right, because you might act on data that's not well time synchronized and make the wrong decision.
Roel de Vries is a business development manager at Fugro.
If you go 20 years back, time synchronization in the power industry, for example, everybody would be happy with a millisecond accuracy. Still, a lot of applications don't require better than that. The most depending applications, though, they want to go below a microsecond and preferably better than that. The better the synchronization is, the better the accuracy of the data and the more applications can be developed. So this is moving up. Also, in time synchronization of telecom networks, we see this happening in the financial sector as well. And the trend is always downwards, of course. Better synchronization.
With better and better time synchronization, things like grid management can be improved.
In the power sector, you can do very well synchronized measurements from geographically distant points in the grid. And once, if you can rely on measurements being timestamped accurately, you can collect them and compare them, and you can, for instance, calculate rapidly how much power is flowing in this segment of the grid, and you can get an updated state information about where is power flowing now in the grid, and you can also rapidly detect when power starts to flow, or when power flow starts to change, and then you, once you have this updated model, you can also determine now the grid is about to be overburdened, and you need to take some actions, and part of this actually comes out of, I mean, the deployment of accurately timestamped measurements comes out of investigations that were made in the aftermath of a big blackout in the Northeast U.S. in, I think it was 2003. Much of New England and parts of New York were simply black for, well, something like 6 hours. And one determined that, well, we simply didn't have the system information updated at a sufficient rate in order to both detect and be able to deploy measures to stop a large cascade of failures.
And as synchronization has improved, more industries have been able to benefit.
A few examples would be that in the finance industry, when we talk about things like stock trading or trading platforms in general, then our customers in that area have typically a very demanding set of regulations they have to fulfill.
Heiko Gerstang is the managing director of Meinberg,
which is a company based in Germany, and they're specializing in time synchronization. We are basically developing and manufacturing and selling a variety of products that is used in all kinds of different industry applications: defense, telecommunications, finance, power grids, media and broadcast, you name it.
Heiko says that the use cases for accurate time synchronization are in two categories. The first being for regulatory and liability purposes.
So you want to be sure that a trading company, for example, is not using any insider information. So when there's a public a press release of a big company, you typically see a trading activity afterwards. If one of the trading companies started to sell stock or buy stock, I don't know, a couple of milliseconds or a couple of seconds before this press release or this public announcement is out in the world, then there is a big possibility that something was not correct in this case. So that's one possibility for reasons, regulations. Same applies to power grids. Power grid operators have to document, for example, the quality of the power generation at various points in their grids in order to make sure that if something goes wrong at a customer, if some machinery is damaged or destroyed, then they can basically give a track record of, hey, the power we provided to this customer is within specifications and is not the cause for that damage, for example. So that's also, in this case, a regulatory and a liability background.
The second is for technical purposes. Without accurate synchronization, many systems and utilities we rely on wouldn't function.
So in telecommunication networks, if we think about our phones, our mobile phones, you need synchronization in between base stations, for example, because when you are sitting in your car and you're having a phone call, you leave the coverage area of one base station, of one cell tower, and you drive into the coverage area of the next one. And that means that the network itself has to hand over your connection from one cell tower to the other. And if the two of them are not tightly synchronized with each other, that is going to cause, at the very least, some disruptions in the audio, but it could also lead to a dropped call or something. And therefore, they have to tightly synchronize their cell towers with each other.
For Amid and Meta, the major concern is the communication of its data servers that are spread across the world.
I mean, depending on what kind of data you have in your databases, you might need to always find a compromise between availability or consistency. And often we opt in for consistency, but then consistency comes with a high price tag in terms of the latency, the availability. I mean, you have to choose, right? Like, basically, you can imagine you have a distributed database and you ask one of the nodes for some information and node gives you whatever it has right away, no question. Well, this data that you get from one node might not be the latest, but that node is providing you everything it has, and that is called availability. Opposed to this, you ask a node something, and the node is like, hold on, I need to check with my peers and see if that was the latest. And check with peers means you have to have all these round trips of messaging going between like node to node. And again, as the number of nodes increases, again, more messaging is needed. And let's say if you have them globally distributed, it means you're talking about latencies that are across the globe, like in range of hundreds of milliseconds. Until it gets the consensus, it might get, for example, something that is newer than what it was supposed to give you. So the data has to also get transferred, and it gives it to you at the end. And this is basically the cost that you had to pay to make consistency versus availability. Not so much using a lot of back and forth messaging, which we call it handshaking. Use a lot of handshaking to create consensus.
But all of this handshaking reduces availability. To reduce the handshaking, instead of node checking with its peers, it can just check an agreed timescale.
Like basically you are delegating this time, like the handshake that was used in to create the consistency to the time, that the time itself has this agreement between machines. And what is time in general? Again, it's very philosophical. We have no idea what time is. But in the context of what we are doing is, this is just a monotonic counter that is consistent enough and reproducible.
But the same problem remains. Clocks are always going to drift.
But again, you can have, the most expensive atomic clock in isolation and be wrong. So just making the timekeeping is not enough. And that is where you need to create also time dissemination, where now you synchronize the clock.
So how do we synchronize time? For things on a small geographical scale, using wires usually does the trick.
If you are looking at a local requirement, a printing machine, for example, which has the different colors in different printing stations, and the paper is running through the machine at a very high pace, you need to synchronize your different colors, time synchronize them, so that whenever the blue dot needs to be right next to the red dot, that is done in a very accurate way. For this kind of application, you can run wires from one color printing a unit to the next one. It's a very local application. And what you also have in this scenario is you only need relative time, right? Only these four colors or whatever need to be in sync with each other.
But it gets more complicated when you want to synchronize time across the globe.
When we talk about the regulatory example that I gave with the finance industry, you need first of all absolute time, and the time stamping happens sometimes on different continents, right? So you have a trading company in the US, and if they send an order to a European stock exchange, this order needs to be time stamped when it's sent in the US, and it needs to be time stamped when it has been received and maybe processed, whatever, in Europe. And that means we are talking about continents, and that it's not a good idea to try and pull a big cable from the US to Europe. So that means you need geographically distributed timing. And for that, very early on, wireless signals have been introduced.
And the technology that changed the game for time synchronization was GPS.
Specifically, when we talk about highly accurate timing, then with the advent of GPS, the availability of a highly accurate time globally without having to pull a cable, basically appeared on the scene. So GPS and what, let's say, we all know as the main and primary application of GPS is positioning. We want to know where exactly we are on the planets, and That again then is used in my car navigation system to tell me, okay, you are here and you want to go there. And by using an electronic map, my navigation system can basically tell me the way. Where should I turn left? Where should I turn right? But the basis for this is my accurate position at any given point in time. And the basis for the accurate position is basically time. And that works with a concept which is called triangulation. Basically, or your receiver basically receives a signal, let's say a ping, just a beep from three different satellites or multiple different satellites. And because the receiver has been told before where each of these satellites is in space at a certain time, he can basically calculate, okay, if I receive the signal from satellite A a little bit earlier than the signal from satellite B, and then satellite C and D come in, by using that time of arrival of the signals and in the receiver, combined with the knowledge of where exactly these satellites are at the moment when they sent this signal, the receiver can basically calculate its own position. And of course, this is all only possible because of highly accurate time in the satellite.
Each GPS satellite will have its own atomic clock, and they can send a signal with the time that its clock says.
Yeah, I mean, the GNSS satellites are essentially very accurate clocks in orbit.
GNSS means Global Network Satellite System. It's the term for any satellite constellation that gives positional navigation and timing data. GPS is one type of GNSS, and you may hear them used interchangeably.
So the GNSS satellite will send out a message essentially saying, hello, I'm satellite number one. I sent this message exactly at 12 o'clock, and I was at this exact position. And your receiver gets that information, and it gets it from more than one satellite.
A GNSS receiver will get that information from four satellites to correct for any clock or positional error.
But GNSS time synchronization does have some pitfalls, particularly around security.
So we've seen spoofing attacks taking place, especially in military active areas. There are also jamming attacks as well. So people reliant on timing from GNSS basically are afraid or getting afraid that this will interfere with their timing on location. There's also various activities by government organizations in preparing for future problems. So basically getting resilient timing in critical infrastructure is a key point there today.
These spoofing or jamming attacks are due to the GNSS signals being weak and easy to block out.
So the signal is very weak, and that in turn makes it very easy to disturb it. If you build a very small radio transmitter and that radio transmitter transmits on the same frequency, on the same radio frequency where the GPS signals are coming in, you can disturb and very easily completely wipe out that signal for this specific receiver. And because of the weakness of the signal, the power you need for this, let's say, attack of which is generally called jamming. And we've also heard about examples where someone had a jammer switched on in his car, and he drove to the airport, parked it in the airport parking space, and forgot to switch it off. And when he came back from vacation a week later, he found his car to be broken because police had to basically find that jammer and basically switch it off by force because it disturbed the whole airport operations.
Jamming obviously presents some pretty serious security concerns, but using a jammer is illegal, and like the man coming back to his car at the airport found out, it's not that difficult to identify the issue and deal with it. More concerning than the threat of jamming is spoofing.
Spoofing, that's a different thing. Spoofing means the signal is not just destroyed or disturbed, but a manipulated signal is basically transmitted. And by using a slightly higher power level than the original signal, the receiver will then pick up the spoofed signal, the wrong signal, instead of the original one. And that is something where the receiver, by definition, first of all, cannot really see a problem. He is not, the receiver is not seeing a problem because he still receives the signal.
But beyond the security threats, GNSS time synchronization has another issue. The information the satellites are sending out isn't completely accurate.
When I told you about, in principle, how position determination using GNSS signals works, I told you that the satellite sends out information saying, I'm satellite number such and such, I'm here now, and the timestamp when I sent this signal out was, well, I said 12 noon exactly. But this isn't the case. This is the information the satellite sends about itself and about itself and its clock. But in reality, satellites are not where they are predicted to be, which is the information they send out. That information is typically updated twice a day or so.
Despite reaching millisecond levels of accuracy, GNSS time synchronization wasn't as accurate or secure as it could be. And these errors in satellite data also caused issues using GNSS for positioning. So correction services were developed to give people more accurate positioning data.
Inside positioning services, corrections are being sent to the end user. These are based on measurements done in a ground station network that Fugro owns. And we send these corrections to the receiver client. The receiver client uses clock and orbit corrections from the satellites, applies these to the measurements done in the receiver, and basically generating better data for the receiver to use for positioning.
If correction services can be used to provide more accurate location data, why couldn't the same be done to improve the accuracy of time synchronization?
So some very smart people at Fugro thought, hey, we can apply this to timing as well. So we dived into a project to develop this.
The typical level of accuracy from GNSS can be around a microsecond, but the new Atomicron system is accurate to the nanosecond. That's a billionth of a second.
It's really mind-blowingly accurate, and this is achieved by providing additional data to the receivers. You have to consider that a receiver is typically placed in an arbitrary position on Earth. When we build one and when we ship one and sell one, we don't know where exactly this thing is going to end. So a receiver is switched on and does not know anything about their own position. At the same time, it receives, that's what I referred to earlier, it receives this table of data which allows it to determine where the satellites are at any given point in time. This data, this table of data, is very static. It's not something that is highly dynamic. You have to download that. It's called the Almanac. And this data is not updated every second. Let's put it this way, right? So the Atomicron approach is based on Fugro's ability to operate roughly 100 reference stations, which are placed all over the planet.
Yeah, from our ground station network, we receive all the satellite data. We combine this data into two network control centers that we have. There we do calculations on that data, and we send that through a communication satellite. We upload it through a communication satellite, and that is being broadcasted down to all the receivers on Earth. So wherever you have a receiver on Earth, it will be able to receive this signal and apply it internally in the receiver to optimize the time accuracy.
But Atomicron doesn't just improve the accuracy. It also provides protection from GNSS signals being spoofed using their navigation message authentication.
Our navigation message authentication, which we implemented, we can actually tell the receiver that the data received from the satellite is authentic data or not. And when it's authentic data, it will be used, and else it will not be used, and you're certain that you received the right data from the satellite.
In fact, it's this security protection that is getting most interest from industry.
The bigger companies, even including Meinberg and Viavi, today see more advantage in the navigation message authentication that prevents spoofing than the high accuracy. Now, they get the high accuracy as well, so it will be in their products and people can start using it.
That's because there are so few applications that exist today for time synchronization to the nanosecond.
Yeah, it basically turned a little bit in a chicken and egg story. We have a solution now to get really high accuracy, and there are no applications because nobody could develop them previously because there was no solution to the problem other than using fiber optic synchronization. So what we see now is interest from parties that have used actually fiber optic synchronization to get to similar accuracy, but want to do it on a larger scale or globally. But there's also other things that we are after right now. There are large telescopes that are basically consisting of multiple dishes that are pointed to the sky, and they need to be synchronized. Now, if you have an array of telescopes that way, and it's local, you can actually do that with fiber optic. But now if you have two arrays somewhere place on the earth and you want to synchronize those together to get good data, there's no way of doing that with fiber optic. So they could use Atomicron now to get these two different sites linked, and then the data is coherent and they can get much more profit out of it.
One nice example for this is that we have a customer who is responsible for servicing oil pipelines. Very long oil pipelines, hundreds of kilometers, and when there is a leakage in an oil pipeline that goes through, I don't know, uninhabited country for hundreds of kilometers, the question is always, how do you find the leakage? Okay, you can send a poor guy in a Jeep who's driving all along that pipeline and he has to look to his side to find the leakage. You use helicopters or whatever. It takes a long time. It is very costly. So what this company is doing, they shut off the oil pipeline on both ends. And on one end, they create a big sound using an explosion, basically. And on the other end, they have microphones. And the traveling sound waves through the oil pipeline are modified in a way when they are hitting this leakage that you can basically calculate with a precision of a few hundred meters where is this leakage over this 200 kilometer section. And then of course you can send the guy in the Jeep directly to this place and they will find it much easier. And that's a good example of the more accurate your timing here would be and the more accurate your measurement would be, the more accurate the point would be that you find out where this leakage is. And of course, a few hundred meters is fine for this example, but in other examples, being able to measure something with higher precision is going to give you a lot of additional benefits. And so I would say that in this case, not a problem at all that at one point someone will use that higher precision to create a benefit for them based on this.
Timekeeping has long been one of humanity's greatest challenges. But we have reached a stage where we can accurately keep time and share it around the world at a greater accuracy than any application requires. But this doesn't mean the journey of improving timekeeping is ending.
Well, I think what will happen in international timekeeping at the highest level is that within 10 years, there will be a new definition of the second. So it will no longer be defined in terms of a radio frequency transition in the ground state of a cesium atom, but it will be defined in terms of a much higher transition in one or a combination of atoms, so in the optical domain. And the reason for this is that there are optical clocks, so in which the resonator or the oscillator is really a laser. So there are a number of labs and institutions have built different kinds of optical clocks, and one sees then that those can be made perhaps 1,000 times more accurate than the current state-of-the-art cesium clocks.
I think it's like with shrinking chips. The transistors are getting smaller and smaller, and everybody thinks there's going to be an end, but then something new comes up and you can get further. It will be used widely, so it will get cheaper as well. I think we're going to see the same thing happening with this as well. I think the synchronization will be able to go down to lower levels in the future. Price will come down, more people can use it, and that will just drive it further. Where the limit is, I don't know. There might be a theoretical limit today. I haven't heard it yet, but that could be somewhere.
So I only have 20 years of experience in the timing industry, and I can say that I think it's a safe assumption to say we are far away from what's currently physically possible, and there's no way we are not going to improve precision and accuracy over the course of the next, let's say, decade or. But I would also say that picoseconds today is going to cover probably 99.99999% of all applications that require time synchronization. So I think we are good, but this is not at all the end of the story.
Engineering Matters is a production of Rebe Media. This episode was written and produced by me, Johnny Dowling, and hosted by me and Rian Owen. Editing and series supervision by John Young, sound engineering by Ross McPherson. And the man who keeps us all in time is Rory Harris. Thank you to our partner for this episode, Fugro, and thank you for listening. You can find us on all podcast apps, on our website, engineeringmatters.rebe.media, and on LinkedIn.